Thank you for joining us on More Than That, a podcast where we dive a little bit deeper into what was preached on Sunday morning. We hope that this is enriching to your walk with Christ and that you love God and people that much more so that we can extend the glory of God to the people he has placed in our lives. So buckle up and enjoy the conversation. Hey everybody, welcome to More Than That. This is a podcast where we just take the pastor or the speaker aside and we just ask them, you know, if there was 10 extra minutes, where would you have gone? What rabbit hole would you have taken the church down? Or what else would you have, like, kind of expanded upon? So I am sitting here with
Rafael Mkanda.
And my name is Tyler Henry. So, Rafael, if you had 10 extra minutes, where would you have gone?
You know, in the middle of that message, I realized, I was like, man, there's a lot more to unpack here.
Mm-hmm.
And one reference that I really would have wanted to go towards, so there's a couple of things here. First is a reference to the table of presence. And it's found like in 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 1 to 6. And so a couple of people have already reached out to me and they were like, hey, so I wonder what happened here. Like, and I was like, it was in my notes, you know. So it's the reference to David when the tabernacle was at Nob, when David was running away from King Saul. And David went to Abimelech, the priest, and then he was looking for food. They were hungry. And then Ahimelech there was the only, tells him, the only thing that we have is the showbread.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, like, and David's like, no, give me that. And then so David and his men eat at that. They ate that. They didn't eat it that. They ate
no, grammar. It. That's yeah, all right. They we can push that, that to the side.
And then they, you know, the only requirement from Ahimelech was, have they been sexually, you know, have they been sexually pure for a while before eating?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously he says yes. And so they eat. And with that, Jesus actually recalls that in Matthew chapter 12, verse 1 to 8, Mark chapter 2, verse 25, and Luke chapter 6, verse 1 to 5, where Jesus recalls this incident after his disciples looked at and there's a complaint that they're eating during the Sabbath, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also that he's healing during the Sabbath and all that. Jesus uses that as an example to parallel his ministry as one who supplies the needs of those that followed him. Like he supplied the needs. And so, so I was going to really just kind of go into that and really just like where at the end of it all, Jesus is using that as a reference because he's showing that now he is now the true what? He is now the true bread
mm-hmm.
who has come, and now he is the one, as God's anointed, David and his men were permitted to eat this bread. So Jesus, as God's anointed, he provides the needs for others of others in spite of the Sabbath regulations, in spite of the regulations of, mm-hmm. of the table. He is now the table. And so after that, obviously, like, that's where I went into just showing that, like, the main complaint was like, man, like, Jesus, who are you sitting with?
Mm-hmm.
And we see Jesus sitting with the downtrodden and the broken.
Mm-hmm.
But he is becoming the picture of that. Like, I used three pictures there, like, of how the showbread was, how the bread of presence was actually described. It was a bread of presence. Describing the fact that God was present with his people at the table, right? Mm-hmm. But it was also the showbread, because they would line up all those loaves of bread so that all of them almost like had this face-to-face encounter with God, right? Like, and then, but also it was this, we get to see that it was also a continual bread. Mm-hmm. Talking about the fact that like there was meant to be this continual relationship with God. We see Jesus fulfilling all those. And I know I did spend some time just talking about this, but it's something that I know beyond the shadow of the doubt. I used the term, and I was like, God help me. I hope I'm not gonna get an email because of this. But yet when I went into the dictionary, I was at least kind of like vindicated that the loaves were representing that, like, as long as that God will never really will always have provide and sustain and protect all of his children. Mm-hmm. And the 12 loaves were representing all the 12 tribes of Israel.
Yeah.
And to apply that, I just really just drove the point home that there are no bastard children in the house of God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and, you know, to think of that, and I think this is something that, like, you know, I don't know about you, but I've struggled with this a lot in my life. Like, you know, really feeling, because of maybe just like where I was born, where I was raised, growing up poor, it's just like a low self-esteem at some point in life and all that. There's always just this point where you have a sense of, man, I know Jesus loves him. Mm-hmm. I know Jesus would use him. I know Jesus would do so for him. For me? Ah, no. Like, I don't know. Like, me? I'm Raphael. I just come from, like, you know what I mean? Like, someone else. The always feeling like an imposter. Mm-hmm. Even when you, but yet really this right here says, hey, you're not a bastard child. You've been washed by the same blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Forgiven. So you are a child of God. But not only that. Yes, you. No one else. Like Moses would say, no, but God, like, send someone else. No. But you are the one that I want. You're the one that I've called to myself. And the most revolutionary scripture for me to break out of that was Mark chapter 3, verse 13 to 15. He called those that he wanted so that they can be with him and he can send them.
Mm-hmm.
I just zeroed in, like, he called me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like you're doing college ministry right now. Like, it's like there's sometimes when it's like, someone else could have done this better than me. Like, man, like, someone else could be a better. But he called me because he wanted me.
Yeah.
Jesus is that showbread that just shows that God doesn't want, you're not a second what? Like, in football, we say a second string quarterback. No. You are the main quarterback for this thing.
Yeah.
And that just, it's so helpful for that. And then probably the last thing that I would have actually drove even more would have been like, when you're looking at this text, especially like jumping into, I want to recommend a book, Meals with Jesus, by Tim Chester, because that's where I took a ton of this stuff, like, of just where Tim Chester kind of follows Jesus and his meals. And in there, he basically, he quotes like three scriptures. If the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life for ransom for many. gives you what Jesus came to do. He came to die, mm-hmm. to give his ransom for many. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. Luke 19:10. Jesus came to what? He came to seek, and he came to save, right? But you know where the other one is like. He says, for the Son of Man came eating and drinking. Mm-hmm. And this is the one that he got hit for the most.
Mm-hmm.
What? You're a glutton and a drunkard. But yet, this is what Tim Chester says. And this is, he says this, the first two statements are statements of purpose. Why did Jesus come? He came to serve, to give his life ransom, and to seek and save the lost. The third statement was a statement of method. How did he come? He came eating and drinking. So at the end of the day, he did evangelism and discipleship around the table, some grilled fish, a loaf of bread, and a pitcher mm-hmm. of wine, and he spent more time eating and drinking. I would say, this is like at least like one of the things I would have really pushed on hard.
Mm-hmm.
It is the table is, number one, the most undermined missional strategy.
Mm-hmm.
The table, meaning that like, and you've seen it. Mm-hmm. You sit down and you share yeah. a drink with a friend.
Yeah.
It's easy to get into conversations you couldn't
it
get into.
It breaks down all the barriers. There's like, you can talk about the strangest, weirdest things.
Yeah.
And because you're consuming something as you're doing it, all the walls tend to
They come down.
They either come down or they're minimized to where you can just hop over them.
Yeah. So for me, I was going to charge our church and say, don't undermine the table as a mm-hmm. missional. Like, you can be able to eat with neighbors. Mm-hmm. Invite them for dessert. Like, do something.
Yeah.
And then also as well, the table is also a communal strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, like, one of the things that Gus loves to say, he says, when crap hits the fan, right, the temptation is to leave the table.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, what really unites us as a community is that we've been changed by Jesus, united by Jesus. So one of the best ways to be really missional, to really grow as a community, is when there's a hard subject to eat, we don't move from the table.
Mm-hmm.
The table is one of the ways that, like, we stay in community. And so when we get together and we share meals together, we're able to get to know each other and be able to even... It's not easy then to begin to smear your brother and sister, because you get to know even more of their stories, of their deepest pains and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you continue to sit at the table, you can get to know each other deeply. That's really, that's like, so yeah, that's I know that's yeah. like, it would have been 15 minutes. That's what I'm saying. So anyway, yeah.
Just, I'd, you know, just kind of have come to expect that. yeah, one, I think that's like really good, especially for our digital culture,
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
kind of like reiterate the concept of the table
mm-hmm.
and what that's able to do. Like, it would be very much easier for us to do this over Zoom.
Yeah.
We could easily do this over Zoom from the comfort of our own homes,
mm-hmm.
but we're here, you got some water here, I got some water over there, like we're still we're consuming something, we're doing something, but if you're doing it over a digital platform, you miss that connection.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to hide behind your keyboard, a whole bunch of things like that. So, like, you know, as I'm doing like college ministry, even though like I understand there's a whole lot of like barriers that students run into, schedules are nuts, and they just feel like they are so crunched for time that they can't actually physically meet.
Yeah.
But trying to get them to, whether it's like over lunch or something like that, where we can just like sit down and talk. Even if we don't actually talk about what we intended to talk about, we're still in community. We're doing life together.
Yeah.
And even though one has like that formal role of minister, it does go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be some practical things that our church could be doing to kind of take this concept of the table outside of the home group, at least? Because home groups do this really well. We get together, we eat at a person's house, talk about the sermon and life and a whole bunch of other stuff. But what are some other ways that we could implement this concept of the table in everyday life as we do? The only word that's coming to mouth is vocational ministry, where our ministry is our vocation.
Yeah. I mean, I say that like Rosaria Butterfield wrote a book called The Gospel Comes with a House Key.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's a pretty interesting because she actually begins to tell a story of, in another one of her books, talks about like why hospitality is one of the most important things.
Mm-hmm.
Hospitality, just really being hospitable to people, becomes a missional strategy in which, you know, you enter into people's pain, you're able to get to know them, and all that. And so the reason why she named it The Gospel Comes with a House Key was the whole idea that, like, in there she says that, like, the bridge between your heart and mind is on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's actually where we're like, hey, so tell me about you.
Mm-hmm.
Man, how can you, you know, and I think what our church can be able to do in the midst of this is get to know your neighbors,
mm-hmm.
get to know your relatives, get to know your work associates, get to know people, and have what I would call diversified tables,
mm-hmm.
where at least once a month you have to be asking yourself, in the last month, have I had someone at my table who totally believes something totally contrary to what I believe in?
Mm-hmm.
And can you just get together with them without any agenda? Like, you're not even trying to share faith at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to know them. Mm-hmm. That's what Jesus did.
Yeah.
The nice part about it is that, like, when he's proclaiming about Zacchaeus, salvation has come to your house, Jesus was patient. He could have proclaimed salvation to him when he's on top of the tree,
mm-hmm.
but he was willing to sit down with him and eat with him. And we are not told what Jesus said at all.
Mm-hmm.
But what we know is that it was sufficient for him to be able to say, Jesus, man, because I've encountered you. And so that's actually like what our missional strategy, and this is what I've always said this, like, if you were to ask me, how do I enact this, like, over some time,
mm-hmm.
it would be just, like, following these four things. Pray. Like, pick up three or four people that you're just, like, are totally outside your community, your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of them don't know the Lord. Pray for them. Pray. Ask yourself, what would increase their joy? Like, what is it? Because we're all broken. We are all going through something. What is it that right now, like, I can be able to be praying for them? And if you have an opportunity, ask them, hey, do you mind if I pray for you about mm-hmm. these things? And then pray for them.
Yeah.
What if God answers those prayers and both of you know that you guys are praying for that?
Yeah.
That will actually break barriers, right? Pray. The second thing is that serve them sacrificially. Like, what would mm-hmm. Jesus do to serve that person? Like, I'm not saying invite them to the table automatically. Like, mm-hmm. sometimes it's just like, hey, serve them and all that stuff, and then build that relationship with them. And then the other side is that, like, man, invite them to the table. Like, have dinner with them. Eat, have some coffee with them.
Yeah.
Get to know them. And then I would say also introduce them to your community. That's now mm-hmm. like where you invite them to an extended table
mm-hmm.
where it's no longer just you, but you invite them. And then you might find that like the people that might answer their questions, and not, it's not you who has to answer all their questions. Mm-hmm. They might actually meet someone else who actually now what, who mm-hmm. be able to answer. And then when God gives an opportunity, that's when we speak.
Yeah.
We share our faith. So yeah, I think we just have to really be able to, like, if it's a coworker, man, hey, what are you doing for lunch? Can we go sit? Man, what's your story?
Mm-hmm.
Man, in a world of social media where everyone likes to talk about themselves.
Especially all the good stuff.
All the good stuff. Hey, what's your story?
Yeah.
Man, you are such an intriguing person. Man, why do you, you know, where, why, who, what? Mm-hmm. You know, ask them about their tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, nobody I've asked about their tattoos has not wanted to share. Like, mm-hmm. and then it becomes like some of their big, the greatest stories. So yeah.
That's why I don't put words on my body.
Yeah.
It forces somebody else to ask me what it is.
Ha.
Because if they're able to read it, there's less to the imagination, or there's less that we have an opportunity to mm-hmm. build that relationship.
I just put them in Latin and Greek and Hebrew.
That's because you and like a handful of other people are the only ones that are able to read it.
Yeah, that's what is that? And then we talk. Yeah.
But I would, like, one thing I want to add though, like, is if you go into a conversation or a relationship or something with an agenda to, like, present the gospel. Like, in that conversation.
Yeah.
Knowing, because one of my best friends is not a believer.
Mm.
They're able to pick that up.
Yeah.
As soon as you start talking. Because mm-hmm. it's going to be so much on the forefront of your mind that mm-hmm. it's going to, the way that you're delivering your advice or the way you're starting the conversation is going to be a certain way. So if we go in with that agenda, it's going to be easily spotted, and those walls are going to stay super, super firm. And
because you're not interested about that person.
Exactly.
You're interested in just throwing your agenda on top.
Yeah.
And maybe just going and doing a victory lap over there.
Yeah, not every conversation has to be an overtly gospel conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that strikes people, especially in the church, it strikes people really, really hard. Like, what do you mean that every conversation doesn't have to be a gospel conversation? It's like, why can't you just enjoy people?
Yeah.
But also, it reminds me of a relationship. He was my favorite apologist who died a few years ago. Nabil.
Yeah.
Have you ever read his story, Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus?
Yes, yes.
Like, mm-hmm. his friend David Wood, who's another apologist, interesting dude. It took years for David to finally get Nabil to see, oh, wow, I'm not following the true God.
Mm-hmm.
So this, what David is trying to get me to see is that.
Yeah.
But it took him years. And yeah, they were just talking back and forth, and it was more, but it was like friendly discussion. They were friends before they even, like, started those conversations, and they built that over the years, and then, you know, look what happened.
Yeah.
Somebody became so fervent for Christ that he made it his job to defend him to the community that he came out of.
Mm. Yep.
So, like,
Jesus has called us to be fishers of men.
Yeah.
Not drive-by evangelists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't be afraid to put that time in, because it's going to pay off, even if that person doesn't come to faith.
Mm.
Ever in their life, and they die a non-believer, you still can say that you were faithful and that you created and you fostered a good, healthy, Christ-centric relationship.
Mm. 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 Yeah, because you are... We underlook the whole, we undermine the whole idea that we're still the testament.
Mm-hmm.
We undermine the whole idea that, like, hey, you can be able to give people a taste of community.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, like, discern when's the right time to talk and when's mm-hmm. the right time.
Yeah.
But, like, you can give people a taste of community, walk with them. Just like, but don't rush. Don't rush because don't rush. But there are some people, obviously, like that's like you meet them right there and there, and they accept Jesus right there and there. Because I'm not saying that like it's a one size fits all. There are some people that are ready, but I probably would say this: the reason probably they are ready is because you are showing up to the field a lot later. You're harvesting where someone else has planted and done all the work.
Yeah.
There's probably some grandma behind that person who's praying and some pastor who's done a ton of the grunt work.
And that's that. Shameless plug for the class I was supposed to teach.
Yeah.
That is exactly what we would be going through. Like, not everybody has to be a reaper.
Yeah.
We can be sowers and it's okay, but, you know, if you're listening to this and you go to City Church, the book is in the bookstore. I actually just put it in this morning.
Tactics.
It's by Greg Kokel. If you don't go to this, don't go to City Church, please order it on Amazon. Like, it's probably one of the most, it's one of my top five books that it would, as a recommendation, that it is a must read for every Christian. Just because it teaches you how to do these type of things, how to have these type of conversations and really invest in the person rather than just try to get to that gospel conversation.
Yeah.
It'll come eventually. So,
yeah.
But yeah, Raphael, thank you. Thank you for the message. Thank you for everything that you do. And this is, I just want to remind you, this is not a replacement for the sermon. It's not a replacement for being involved and plugged into a local community. It's not a replacement for being at the table with somebody.
Yeah.
So please get involved with a local body, get involved with a local church. And if you're in Williamsport, and whether you're like a resident or you're passing through, we'd love to meet you. If you hear this, come in and say hi. We'd love to serve you and be your home for that Sunday. So again, thank you, Raphael, and have a blessed week, guys.
Bless you.